Gavin Woods Podcast, proudly brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Gavin, meet Elvis Costello.
Elvis.
Hello.
How are you?
How are you?
Thank you for taking a little time out of your busy night in New York.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
And congratulations on the album, mate. I absolutely adore it.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
I'm a big fan. Elvis Costello, you got me at Oliver's Army.
Oh, that's good.
And I've been a fan ever since.
Put that a while back.
Well, Oliver's Army was just a great radio song. It leapt out of the speakers.
Yeah, well, that's what that, you know, when you're making records for the radio, that's what you're trying to do.
That's very true.
All the records that we made in 78, 79, that is what we were trying to do. And that was the way we mixed them, really, for, I don't know whether we had much idea about American radio, but for to be on the BBC, certainly this year's model was mixed to be on the BBC with, along with ABBA and the Bee Gees. You know, we weren't really thinking about Led Zeppelin and old music like that, you know.
I always remember back then you'd mix the album with the big speakers and then all of a sudden you'd put it down into the little speakers just to see how it would sound on the radio.
Yeah, the Horrortones. Yeah, the Horrortones.
Horrortones, that's right, yeah.
And that was a good thing. And later on I would, you know, when we had access to a car, sometimes you go, you know, flip a cassette into the car and listen to it. There's a good test. If you're trying to make a record for the radio, you were trying to create what it would sound like to some degree, you know.
Well, being an old radio jock, that's the only way I can listen to music is in the car.
Well, right now I'm in New York, so I don't drive here, but I was, you know, I drive out west. But here you walk about if at all, yeah.
So is everything still locked down over there, or is it getting a little bit better?
There's a fair degree of alarm at the moment because there are a high number of people with infection. Thankfully, not so many people getting very sick. So that maybe is a sign of the way we gradually adjust back to the way things used to be when people got colds, but it didn't necessarily, you know, precede more serious illness unless you had the misfortune to have a great vulnerability. I'm only going on the impression I get from friends who have been through this. But it's quiet around town today, for sure, yeah.
So is New York your base now?
Yes, since the summer we moved back here. And, you know, I haven't been here that much, truthfully, because we did a 22-date tour of America, which was great to get back on the stage, particularly as we had the, you know, a situation I probably hadn't had since the time when we were talking about it, since 1977 when I started out. You know, my first record was recorded before I became a professional musician, and when I formed the Attractions, I already had maybe half or two-thirds of this year's model already written. So we didn't actually play all the songs from My Aim Is True, but we had a lot of songs which were brand new to the audience. As we were brand new to them anyway, it didn't make any difference. And I would say that this year is the first time that I've had that same combination of two albums worth of material to play for the first time on stage, because the Imposters took possession of the songs from Hey Clockface that I put out last year, which was recorded on my own in Helsinki and with a group of French musicians, and completed with some work I did with a friend of mine in New York soon. And we found a way, like I say, to work together despite the distance between us, because as you know, most recordings are an accumulation of moments. There's usually a core performance done in one take with everybody playing. But even then, you probably put the singer in a booth and put the drummer in a booth. You're not right on top of each other. So it's really only a state of mind if you do it in sequentially, as we did. I would communicate with Pete. I would send him the sketch of the way I felt the song went. He'd give it back to me with the drums in place, and then I was able to build my vocal and guitar part more confidently from that and send it to Davey to put the bass on and wait to hear what Steve had to say when it reached him in France, you know. And I mean, none of that took very long, really. I mean, that's the way The Boy Named If came about. So I don't really know it took any more time than if we'd been all in one studio, because we probably would have spent a lot of time chasing the arrangement round the building. You know, in this case, somebody spoke first and somebody spoke last, and then Sebastian mixed what we put together. And it's maybe because the songs are pretty straightforward in their story, we were able to hear what we should do. And we also have a lot of trust in each other. The three of us have played together for 45 years, and Davey has been the bass player in the Impostors for 20 years now. You know, people who are sentimental about the deep past forget that we have 20 years of experience of this band playing together, twice as long as the Attractions existed, you know, so.
How long has Charlie Sexton been in the band?
Charlie joined us for the tour in October. He played a couple of shows with us last summer. We were unable to get the traveling papers for the letters of transit for the Victor Laszlo of rock and roll, Steve Naive, who lives in France. And at that time, we couldn't get the exemption on his visa to get him into America. And we had two shows coming up in the that had been long delayed. And we didn't want to let them go. We were anxious to get back playing. So Charlie was good enough to come, and we conceived a band called The Layabouts, which was a two guitar lineup, and we did two shows, one in Kansas City and one in Omaha, Nebraska. And it, we all liked playing together so much, we invited him to join the tour, and he's going to come on the road with us next June when we tour in the UK.
Charlie from San Antonio, Texas. I would have loved to have been at those two shows. They would have kicked.
Well, you never know. I mean, if things work out well and he wants to stay along with us, which it would, from the evidence of the last shows we played, I think everybody loved hearing him play with us, and we loved having him along. And you know, it's funny how having an extra member in the band actually made us play more dynamically. So I think we were, it was, you know, it could go to the heights, certainly with him playing guitar, but we also sort of played with more control on the numbers that benefited from that. We played some really nice new arrangements of some older songs, as well as all these brand new tunes.
Yeah.
And of course, having five of us sort of having a look at songs that I'd, you know, recorded on my own in Helsinki, we found a way to play them that were, they really turned into different songs by the end of the tour, you know. So we had those, and we were playing things like Mistook Me for a Friend and Farewell OK and Magnificent Hurt, The Death of Magic Thinking. Those were heard for the first time in these shows. And you could tell from the audience's response that these were the kind of songs we'd really have a good time playing whenever we get on a stage. And of course, we'd have to hope that it won't be too long until we get to Australia, though, you know, as you're in the summer season when we often come, it's probably going to be a while yet.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that for sure, but because of all the travel problems and different rhythms that the countries are on in terms of getting out of this emergency we're in, I guess we've got to be a little patient. You know?
Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives since 1934. Visit tobinbrothers.com.au.
Hello, this is Elvis Costello, and you're listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
Now, Farewell OK is the new single from the album The Boy Named If, and I saw you perform it.
If you saw it on TV, you probably saw it on the Royal Variety Show. Do you get that out there?
Yes, you opened it, and that was brilliant. I love that.
Thank you.
I got very excited when I saw you on that. I thought, thank God, the Royal Variety performance has got a bit of rock and roll on it.
Well, I think that was the reaction of the audience as well. They were taking bets on who I was when I came out. That's for sure, because it's, you know, it's a more, shall we say, buttoned up kind of audience. My father played that show in 1963. He was on a slightly better bill with the Beatles and Marlene Dietrich and Bert Bacharach, whereas, you know, on our show we had some acrobats and Rod Stewart. It wasn't quite the same thrill, you know, but a variety show is what it suggests. You know, I think some people were quite surprised to see us play it, but because my old fella had done it, I thought, well, I'll have a go before the royals close up the shop. You know, it could be any moment now. They're running out of princes and an alarming rate. But, you know, I met them afterwards. They were nice enough young people. You know, they're well scrubbed and polite and curious about everything that's going on, and sort of that fella will be the king one day if they still have that.
He will be too. King William, yes. So
yeah, so get him good with him now. And like, you know, I think I've had all the joy out of that I'm likely to have.
You might get another OBE. Congratulations on the first one.
You know, it's people get so upset about these things because those that don't really hold with any of that kind of thing, it's kind of a bit daft to be named after something that doesn't exist. and something which heaven knows did a lot of harm when it was in existence. But I think people just take on too much about it all. To me, it was just like being invited to a party with some people you don't know. I mean, I went along out of curiosity, really, as much as anything. If they want to give it to me, I'll say, there you go. Put it in the cupboard with the other things that don't mean anything. But, you know, the awards and things of any kind are a bit odd because you're in a race with other people of doing things. You can't compare the life's work of a surgeon to a pop singer or a soldier to a nurse, you know. And it's the same with songs in award shows or films. You know, they're so different. I don't really know how they're supposed to be in competition, but they make these things up so we can have a party, really.
I was trying to count the number of albums that you've done. I got up to about 46. Is that correct? Can you recall?
I don't think it's that many studio records. I think we're up at about 33 studio records, maybe.
Yeah.
32, maybe. But, of course, if you count the compilations and the live records and other collaborative things which I've not seen as part of my main catalogue, I don't know how many. I mean, I know... it's a lot of music. That's the good thing about getting to do those other sort of occasions for recording is that, you know, you often have to gather some skills, you know, to do it. Like I had to learn to write music down when I was already sort of nearly 40. So I picked up some things along the way and understanding the different shapes of songs so that when I picked up the guitar again or go back to the piano to write a song, it all seems brand new to me again because I've been somewhere else. You know, it's like, you know, a change has opened up a door to maybe a different way to hear the harmony or rhythm and the different types of song you could write and the collaborations with other people when you're serving their music is, of course, a kind of education. You know, I didn't myself go to college, so I've had my education in music and in many things along the way. Hopefully some of that is heard on The Boy Named If. And if you can keep the kind of, you know, the energy of the music alive as well, and it, you don't sound blasé about playing simple forms of music like something like Farewell OK, you can have joy in playing a song like that. And then a song with a little more harmony in it, like Trick Out the Truth, I probably wouldn't known how to write that 40 years ago. You know, but I'm glad I can write it. You know.
That's a lovely ballad, Trick Out the Truth. I like that song.
Thank you. Yeah, it's about Halloween. Yeah, it's about the idea that, you know, we all dress up as monsters and real monsters live among us. It's a simple idea, really, but Halloween's a very important holiday in our family, so I wanted to kind of write a song celebrating it, really, you know.
Yeah, I know how big it is. I was in L.A. for 15 years, so I know all about Halloween.
It's much more a thing... in America than it was when I was growing up in England. It wasn't that much of a deal. We bob for apples or duck for apples, but we don't really have pumpkins in England, so we couldn't really do those big jack-o'-lanterns. You know?
So tell me, Elvis, the family dynamic, three boys, twins, and Diana Krall, one of the greatest jazz singers in the world, you know, sold over, you know, 20 million albums and everything like that. What's the family dynamic between the two of you? I mean, do you look over each other's shoulder or how does that kind of work?
Well, I think when you, particularly when we've been all in the one place over the last couple of years, of course it's a lot. You know, there's a dedication on the record to all of our partners, you know, because we were making a huge row in the house, you know, making this record in the, and my boys, understandably at 15, are their interests are changing by the minute, and everything is exciting and new, whether it's humor or video games or music or what instruments they might pick up and put down. And I think it's, I really be honest, I think that it's harder for Diana, who has so much music at her fingertips. You know, she's a way more accomplished instrumentalist than I'll ever be. I mean, she has so much capacity at the piano. Sometimes when days or weeks go by when she doesn't play, it's almost like a real surprise when she sits down suddenly out of the blue and all this music comes flying out.
Right.
But the one thing she doesn't have is the opportunity, you know, to play with other people, which is, of course, at the foundation of the idiom of music that she's, you know, she celebrated in Oh, I think that really I know she was due to go on tour, and that was postponed because of the current kind of alarms.
Sure.
And whereas I was fortunate to get out between the different type of, you know, waves of this. And I know that she's, you know, there are amazing things brewing in her imagination, that I know that it will, she will, you know, that it, and naturally it's very difficult to be away from something you've done or every day almost for most of your life. She's been playing since she was in public, since she was 15, you know. So long before she was a recording artist, she had a, you know, she played as a pianist before she was a singer. So she knows so many songs. There's so much music and so much that people don't know about her. And she's not like me. She's not tremendously garrulous. So, and if you, you know, you have a an image which is attractive, that then that is people respond to that. But at the same time, it also disguises sometimes the all the feeling that you might have for lots of different music that she's interested in. So we are not in any way in different worlds. We you know, she will understand things about music that I, technically speaking, that I only respond to emotionally. And by the same token, I will probably be, you know, she is very, you know, reads a tremendous amount, but I am the one who writes words in great number. So that I, you know, I write words perhaps in the same way she plays the piano, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a fluency of just words coming out. Is it doesn't mean they're all of value, but it's, these are the ideas, whether they're expressed in words or music. And I find that when I'm writing on the guitar, I'm that often carries me along in the rhythm. And other faster songs are written on the guitar because I'm much more fluent on the guitar than I am the piano. But then maybe the possibilities of unusual melodies and harmonies occur more when I do play the piano.
Yeah.
Even if I'm sort of reluctant to do it in her hearing sometimes, because I'm stumbling around playing the same thing badly over and over again till I get the tune to come out, whereas she would sit down and play the same music in seconds. But that's what I'm hearing, you know.
I can actually hear that influence, because, you know, some of the songs on the album are melodic, you know, and they're really beautifully crafted.
Tobin Brothers Funerals, a family-owned business since 1934. Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hello, this is Elvis Costello, and you're listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
Now, when you gathered the information for the upcoming book, which I want to talk about, because I think this is a great concept that you're going to, so we're going to talk about that now.
Thank you.
Did you watch the boys discover their own life? Were you influenced by that when you wrote the 13 parts of the book?
No. That is a misapprehension that they are indeed children's stories. They're only, when I said that they're children's stories in the subtitle of the record.
Well, coming of age.
Coming of age is definitely a theme of a couple of the songs, but so are other times in life. I mean, I didn't sit down and write this out as a story in advance. What happened was I wrote a bunch of songs very short period of time. And as I wrote them, we began recording them. And when I could hear them clearly animated by the playing of the band, I started to really recognize that they had a lot of common themes about the way you are at a certain time. When you leave childhood, you leave behind a certain amount of fantastic imagination and daring and unselfconscious joy, and you become sort of more consumed with teenage lust and the studies of various subjects which are obscure to you. They're used to you, like trigonometry or algebra is not very clear when you're 15 or so. That's my boy's age, but I mean, they hadn't reached that age when I wrote these songs, so I couldn't directly relate into their experience, more remembering the way it felt to have the first inklings of those other feelings, which become all very dominant. They dominate your not just your mind, but your body. And then when you're a young man, you have sort of some knowledge of what all that means, but you don't have any sense of which way up you're standing half the time, or who you're in love with, why you're in love with them, or anything, you know. Yeah. And then as you get older, it changes again, until you may be acting like inappropriately, I don't mean in a criminal way, but just sort of like still hiding behind the alibi of there's another side of you that other people don't understand, which is not that different to pretending you have an imaginary friend when you're a kid to get you out of trouble. You know, I didn't break that vase, my friend did. He's invisible, you know. And although I never had that imagining myself, I know it exists among my friends, and it also exists in my Catholic upbringing of being told I was being watched by a guardian angel, which is, when you think about it, a rather odd idea to put upon a kid, you know. So I think throughout the record you hear the accounts of and hear from characters who are at different places in life, right up to like Mr. Crescent at the end, who's looking back and at all his transgressions, you know.
Yeah, it wraps it right up. Mr. Crescent, the last song, doesn't it? Wraps up the whole concept that you've put out. Now, this is a great concept. I don't think anybody else has ever done this, Elvis, and congratulations to you. 13-track album, plus an accompanying book, 88 pages, hardback storybook, which kind of explains the 13 tracks, and it's a limited edition.
Yeah, I mean, not like literally, like it's not like an instruction manual. I kind of, I wrote it, those short stories, and they are short. Some of them are only a page of a scenario. Some of them are 3-4 pages long. They're not epics, you know. But I wrote them because we were told initially, when we were initially planning the release of the record, that there was a shortage of vinyl, and that there would be no central physical object of any substance. So I said, well, what about having already drawn the cover of the record as a storybook? I decided that it might be appealing to have that book be a real thing and open it, and there would be illustrations. And I had thought about this idea of writing stories that were perhaps the preceding scene to the song, or the background action to the foreground action of the song, or vice versa, or the postscript to the song. There's something of all of those things in these stories. So the first one takes place in a dance hall where the music playing is probably Farewell OK, but some of the lyrics of Farewell OK describe all the sort of chaos of a dance hall. So that's what I made that story about, just a drunken incident in the balcony of a ballroom. So be familiar to many of us, you know, that have taken to the night. And so the stories go on. Some of them are quite sinister or upsetting, and some of them are humorous or mysterious, and so are the songs. And I tried on this record to make the songs reward repeated listening, but at the same time, not tie them with a big bow, so it says, and the moral of the story is at the end. You know, in some cases, different listeners will probably have a different idea of what's being said or who's right and wrong at the end of the tune, you know.
Right. So they'll be signed and numbered as well. Great idea. Just a beautiful package. I'm looking forward to seeing it all.
They did a very good job in the realizing it. I never dreamed it would be, when I came up with it, I thought it would be a fairly flimsy thing. And when I got one in my hands, I was kind of amazed. It really looked, you know, it was a very solidly bound book. And the printing of I do these illustrations on an iPad with, you know, like very, very vivid colors. And I'm by no means a great cartoonist or artist or whatever you call it. I know they're daubs, but they are from my own imagining. And therefore, they are personal in that sense. And I find a great solace in drawing, and sometimes in moments of anxiety or stress that have been with us for a number of reasons over the last few years, family illness and such. I found a lot of comfort in just losing myself in something other than music, because music, it tends to be more proactive, you know.
Well, Farewell OK is out now. It's dropped. And the album, The Boy Named If, and other children's stories will drop next week at record stores. Now, it's on all platforms, and also in all, like, vinyl, CD, I noticed tape, and also an 8-track. I mean, you've covered everything.
I'm not sure the 8-track isn't something I made up and hoping it would come into existence, because I said storybook and then we did that. I wouldn't be surprised. I know they're going to do a cassette, and I was trying to get a flexi disc, I mean, bear in mind, I'm the guy that put out a couple of records on shellac at 78 about 10 years ago. That I thought would suit being on a 78. So I actually managed to get a couple of 78s pressed, and we did a limited edition of them. I think what I'm trying to sort of suggest by all of this isn't just a gimmick. It sort of is. It means something. That is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's wonderful that we can get all the music ever made at the click of a computer control. And it's wonderful that we can transmit musical ideas across time and space. That, in other words, we wouldn't have made this record at the time we did if we'd not been able to do that. But the flip side of it is that the finished result of that work can be carelessly dispersed like a bucket of pilchards into the stream of download and streaming systems, and you lose the sense of a story. So all I did with wanting to keep hold of a different kind of formats of recording medium, whether it's vinyl, CD, cassette, if we can do 8-track and anybody's got one, they might just want the object, and particularly this book where you had the opportunity to add another dimension of narrative and illustration. That's also, you have something to hold central to the, that's from me to you. If you want to get involved, you've got the choice. It's up to you. You could hear one song on the radio or on your random streaming device, or you can, go dive deeper in if that's your wish. There's no correct way to listen. I have no control over what people do with it. People, as I've said, will have their own imagination of songs. And sometimes you mishear the lyrics and the new line you made up is as good as the one that was really there or better. But with this, I just wanted it to be available in these different ways so people could have a physical thing, even as the music speeds through the ether to you, by some magic.
I'm just glad that vinyl's back. You can actually hold the album, read the liner notes, read everything, and like we used to do when we were buying albums all those years ago.
Well, it's not a nostalgic thing because it's a medium that already pushed another couple of listening sort of systems out of the way, cylinders and then 78s, Edison discs, before the regular 78s, and then 45s and 33s and 16s, if anybody remembers those, the spoken word records. And then, cassettes, you could understand why they were a good idea because they were very portable. And CDs, I guess, were thought to be indestructible, which they're obviously not. And they were also said to be very expensive to produce, which is also a lie, which, we know. So some of the things were about selling as new hardware, weren't they?
Yeah.
If you go back into the history of recorded music, they were actually initially trying to sell you furniture, and that furniture was the Victrola, the big ones that were like a cabinet, So all the ways along, there's always, when in the manufacture of ways to listen to music, there's always been an element of selling you a new idea. And I think it's probably demonstrable that vinyl is certainly, well, analog recording is... All digital recording now imitates analog recording. All of the outboard plugins for digital recording systems all take their cues from the developments of Abbey Road and Capitol, all these classic analog studios. But tape is less, it's obviously more expensive to create, harder to protect, allegedly. But vinyl records are really, have a beauty to the artwork because you get an opportunity to make something of a decent scale. And the booklet that comes with a CD doesn't just get raw ripped after playing it twice, So I would argue the case for all of this to be... The main thing is hear the music, enjoy it if you want it. That's all you can say.
Just to wrap up, Elvis, I love your quote. Sometimes I sit and write things down. The rest of the time I play guitar in a rock and roll band. I love my family. I really love everybody, especially the people I can't stand, even those who trespass against us, and there are a lot of them. That is priceless. I love that.
But, they won't get better if we don't love them.
That is so true, my man. So true. Mate, congratulations on this fantastic album. I've listened to the album four or five times. And every time I listen, I hear something new, something different. I dive deeper. And I really, really love Elvis Costello at the moment.
Well, that's a really kind thing to say. And it's why we, even though we made it in a kind of, you know, tumult of activity and, I guess, inspiration and energy, I think we the agreements that we made did reward repeated listening. There are little touches that particularly Steve and myself, I think, brought in. So let's hope that people enjoy it, and I look forward to being back with you as soon as we can. Thank you for your questions, and I will see you down the road.
Well, those Palais Theatre shows, sensational. Looking forward to sitting there and hearing you again.
All right. Until then.
I can't wait to see you when you come down and have a drink with you.
All right. We'll have a ginger ale. All right. See you then.
Good on you, mate. All the best. Thank you for your time. Bye now. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Gavin Wood's podcast was thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.